come down and threaten us.
Is the singularity near?
The military-industrial complex.
The truth is out there.
The seven mountains of the influencers of culture.
To be as gods, you know, catapult of propaganda.
From a mostly secure, undisclosed split level location on a cul-de-sac somewhere in the heartland of America, this is A View from the Bunker. Now, here's Derek Gilbert.
One of the good things about being a Christian, or a Jew for that matter, is that our faith is based on history. Verifiable, documented history. Welcome to A View from the Bunker. I'm Derek Gilbert, not just in audio now, but also on YouTube. We thank you for watching if you're checking out the video version of this. As kind of a history geek, certainly not a scholar, I've found reading about history interesting, but especially as I began to read history with an eye toward correlating the historical accounts with the accounts that we read in the Bible. And it is almost laughable how often the Bible has proven skeptics wrong. Skeptics who've called the Bible nothing but a collection of myths and fairy tales, make-believe, essentially. And yet finding that as archaeologists dig up more and more of the Holy Land and ancient Mesopotamia, they find accounts that are consistent with the biblical record. Well, at the recent Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference, I had the opportunity to sit down with a couple of men who themselves have devoted a lot of time, in one case, his whole life, to the study of the archaeological record. And we present those interviews to you now as part of our series from the 2016 Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference. This week, we talked to Dr. Randall Price and filmmaker Timothy Mahoney. There's a stereotype of archaeologists in the 19th century going out into the field in the Middle East with a spade in one hand and a Bible in the other. How accurate is that? I hope I get a chance to find out. Our guest here is the founder and president of World of the Bible Ministries and the director of excavations on the Qumran Plateau since 2002, speaking on a number of topics that are very relevant both from an archaeological standpoint and also geopolitically. It is our honor to welcome Dr. Randall Price.
Thank you.
Well, I've done a little reading on the Temple Mount recently, both from a geopolitical standpoint. I produce daily news updates and also just for my own curiosity, what may come. I think prophetically the Temple Mount is going to be right at the center of the storm in the years ahead. Your talk has a provocative title. Your talk about the Temple Mount, Hoax of the Millennium. What would that hoax be?
Well, I'm responding to people who have produced an alternate view of the location of the temple, claiming that the current or historic Temple Mount is actually a hoax, that it was not in fact the place of the temple, that the Jewish people forgot the location of their temple, and in fact the research shows that it was located down in the city of David
across the spring.
Well, I think it's a very irresponsible position because we have decades and decades of actual excavation, ongoing excavation, that has an overwhelming abundance of evidence that says the temple was always where it was. There's been no loss of that knowledge. The Jewish people have retained that knowledge. They never left the site. They always prayed toward that site. They always desired to restore the temple. And the result is that today we have a movement among the Muslims that revise history and want to deny a temple ever existed.
Right.
And unfortunately, when well-meaning Christians who want to try to come up with a view that says the temple doesn't have to be built on the Temple Mount, it can be built somewhere else and we can solve problems, they don't realize the problems they cause. Mm-hmm. That they play right into the political ideology of the Muslims who deny a temple existence. They say the Christians, and they don't believe it existed there either.
Mm-hmm.
So they use that to marshal their evidence against the Jewish people.
Mm. And certainly the rabbis, at least from the reading that I've done, believe that they know exactly where it's supposed to be and where it has always been.
Yeah, there's no doubt of this information. In my presentation, I trace it from the very beginning, the first temple, second temple, all the way through the time after the destruction of the temple. Many people don't realize that for hundreds of years after that, Jews continued to sacrifice at the site, to visit the site, reverence the site, even tried in several occasions to rebuild the temple on the site,
mm-hmm.
as Roman emperors allowed that. And then when they were banned eventually from the site, they came back annually to go to the Mount of Olives and on Tisha B'Av,
mm-hmm.
commemorative of the destruction of the temple, to pray over the site, which could only be seen from the Mount of Olives. This is the Temple Mount, not the City of David. So while this is an interesting perspective some people have raised, it lacks the research to be credible, and it, of course, has geopolitical consequences.
I would suggest that from a spiritual standpoint, the reason there's so much resistance to allowing non-Muslims to the Temple Mount is because the supernatural principalities and powers who are aligned against God's people know exactly where the temple is, or was, and will be again someday. Switching to another talk, and another topic that's of great interest to people who are interested in the mysteries, the historical mysteries of the Bible, the location of Noah's Ark. You were featured in a film we've talked to Dr. Aaron Judkins about, Finding Noah.
Yes.
And the search for the Ark. Why is the search for the Ark important? Does it matter?
Well, on one level, it doesn't, because we who believe the Bible believe the Bible's true. But we also live in a very skeptical age, an increasingly skeptical age, in which the book of Genesis, which is the foundation theologically of all of the great doctrines of the Bible, everything that the sin, salvation, the messianic program, even Israel's origin, all takes place in Genesis. And if that's been reduced to a mythological text, borrowed from other ancient places and doesn't have historical relevance, then why should we believe these things?
Right.
Tied to that, of course, is Jesus' own statement that as in the days of Noah, so shall the days of the coming of the Son of Man be. So he looks to the future and said there's a judgment coming in the future, and it's based on the actual historical judgment that happened in the past with the flood. If that didn't happen, no reason to expect this will happen. And so it's very important, I think, for people to wake up to the fact that the book of Genesis is good history. Now, the only way you can do that is by bringing evidence for that history. And in the case of Noah's Ark, the pivotal point is this, massive worldwide flood occurred, and an ark preserved 8 people of the human race to start over. That's either fact or it's fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And so the search for the ark is to produce some of those facts so that people who say, well, I wish I could believe it. I've been through the university experience, and they told me this is all nonsense, borrowed stories. But this will allow them to have the evidence now to make their decision on a reasonable ground, to say, well, we do have evidence, and this is believable. And there's always, of course, people who won't believe no matter how much evidence you bring, because their mind's made up. And so I think this is part of the archaeological endeavor, not to look for things that we cannot find, but things we can find. And from our research, this is 8 years now I've been involved with this expedition to Mount Ararat, we believe we have evidence, we believe we have a location, and we think soon we'll be able to confirm what may be there.
So there's some testing going on, perhaps, on something brought back, or anything you can share at this point?
No, I can share it.
Okay.
We think we're close. So.
Yeah, fascinating stuff. I know Dr. Judkins is very excited about that as well. Just very quickly, I know that the other ancient Near Eastern cultures that preceded the Israelite culture, the Akkadians, Babylonians, Sumerians, all have their flood myths. Utnapishtim, Atrahasis, Ziasudra.
Gilgamesh.
Gilgamesh, right. The big cube. We had the opportunity, my wife and I, to attend the media day opening of the Ark Encounter in Kentucky, and they had a wonderfully entertaining animation showing the different types of craft described by the other myths, and the cube of Gilgamesh basically would have had everything splattered against the walls like jelly.
The latest is actually the Simmons tablet, which was found a few years ago in the British Museum, and it depicts a huge ark, but it's round, like the type of vessels they had made of papyrus and stuff.
Like a coracle?
Yeah, but what's interesting is the first text we have from an ancient Eastern source, and this is Sumerian, that says that the animals came on two by two, just as it does in the Bible. So that's an interesting detail.
Yeah. It's fascinating, of course, that scholars will look at that and say, well, clearly the Hebrews copied their religious history from the Sumerians.
There's a good argument against that. It's this, that when we look at these mythological texts, they're clearly mythological. Anyone who looks at it can see that. When you talk about myth, over time, myth does not become more historical, it becomes more mythical. But when we look at the biblical text, which is later in time than these things, it reads more historical, less mythical. Obviously not mythical at all. That God is even in the background. It emphasizes dimensions and information about timing of the flood and all these details that you really don't have in these other accounts. There's a lot of original material. So you can't get history from myth, which indicates these probably had a common history that they're all looking at, and then one theology goes one way, and the original theology stays with
it. It's like getting the same news source from different yes. news organizations with very different political views. The work at Qumran, do I understand correctly, you're going back this fall?
Yes, not to the Qumran Plateau. We were there okay. for 10 years, and that work's being published now. But we are excavating a cave mm-hmm. to the south of Qumran. It's a very interesting cave. It was first discovered in 1994, something called Operation Scroll. They believe that because the Palestinian Authority was getting Jericho returned to them and other things, they felt in time all of this area would be turned over to them and they would lose access to the possibility of new Dead Sea Scrolls. Hmm. So a number of archaeologists, like 200, scanned the caves. All they did was go in and look, see what was there, dig around in the floor, make a report. I found this through a satellite data, and then when we got to the cave, we started looking to see if anybody else, because we saw it had been disturbed, and found a report on it about the big wings at the back of the cave where they would hide things. Other things in the cave had never been excavated at all, so we're going to go back and complete that work.
Hmm.
And that'll be in the winter, which is the best time to do this. Small team, but potential is to find maybe more Dead Sea Scrolls, at least find evidence of who lived there and what times. There's other possibilities, too, because the cave has columns on it. And you know, from the Copper Scroll, it mentions that one of the items of the Copper Scroll, which is another scroll, is hidden in the cave of the columns. I mean, people in the past have looked at caves with natural columns, but this cave has man-made columns. And from the cave, you can look over the Qumran Plateau, and you can see that they watched and saw everything that was going on. I think it's a very strategic place. So if they're thinking of the cave of the columns and it's a unique cave of the columns, that makes more sense. So we're just going to investigate this. I'm not, you know, broadcasting we're going to find anything.
Sure.
But we're hopeful, and that's the ambition of archaeologists, to look and see what you can find.
Well, let me ask this then. How significant have the finds in the caves at Qumran been, and then how significant might this find be?
Well, the original discoveries were made by Bedouin in the 1940s, what we call Cave 1 and 2. Then the Copper Scroll was found in Cave 3, and then later they moved to Qumran, about a mile and a half to the south, and found Cave 4, and 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and then back to the other site, Cave 11, where the Temple Scroll was found. And in most all of these caves where they found scrolls, it added uniquely to our information that we didn't know about this period of time, which is so close to the time of the birth of Jesus and the formation of the New Testament. So a lot of what they talk about parallels things in the New Testament in terms of the ideas. Because the Judaism that existed after Christianity began was in reaction to it. It changed dramatically with the destruction of
Torah.
So what you have is a different Judaism that existed before the time of Jesus. Mm-hmm. Now we know that Judaism. So everything you find in that way is very helpful.
It helps expand our understanding of Second Temple Judaism, and then that influence, the influence of that theology on our Christian doctrine.
Well, both Old Testament and New Testament.
Right, right.
Now, there haven't been caves excavated, really, since probably the 1950s. There have been one here or there, but further down to the south, and finding things from the Bar Kokhba revolt. When we're looking at a period of time we think is right at the time of the formation of the community, the time also close to the formation of the church and the time of Jesus. So we're hopeful we'll find some new information, advance our knowledge.
That's fascinating. That's one of the things I appreciate about the work of scholars like you who go out and actually dig up the information and help us to better understand where we came from. We can't really understand where we are without that information. So, well, where do people follow your work?
Well, they can go to our website, worldofthebible.com, and there's a lot of free information and downloadable material. My schedule's there. There's also our resource catalog with a lot of materials. And then when there's events like this, expeditions or tours or things that we do, all that information's there. They can also find me because I teach full-time at Liberty University.
Mm-hmm.
Just go to liberty.edu, and they can go now to Liberty Biblical Museum. I'm the curator of that. That's an exciting new thing that we started last year. 5,000 years of history, almost 2,500 artifacts, really covering all the biblical period. So,
fascinating stuff. Dr. Randall Price, one of the 27 speakers here at the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference. We thank you for watching. In Colorado Springs, I'm Derek Gilbert. Our next guest here at the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference is a gentleman who has done something that I've only dreamed of, which is travel to foreign lands to investigate a story that I absolutely find fascinating, and that is the story of the Exodus. He is the man behind Thinking Man Films and, of course, the producer, director, and featured in the film Patterns of Evidence, Timothy Mahoney. Tim, it is really good to meet you.
It's good to meet you, Derek. Yes.
I'm kind of a history geek, and I don't know why, but I've always found fascinating periods of history that seem to turn on one man. The right man in the right place at the right time. In American history, we could look at a George Washington, but we look at the scope of human history, and there aren't many figures who are larger than Moses in the impact they've had on all of history. And yet modern historians and archaeologists, looking at the story of the Exodus, tell us that it's an invention. The Israelites just grew organically out of the Canaanite culture. Moses never existed. There's no evidence for the sojourn. What was it about that story that led you to take your background as a in film production and investigate the story for yourself?
Well, I'll be very honest with you. I never set out to do this. I mean, it starts in a journey usually starts just heading for the first hill, and then you don't realize the mountain range that you're going to be going, you know, going
the hill
through.
Obscured the mountains behind it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if I knew what I know now and all the places that I had to go. But the investigating the story of the Bible for me was very important. I grew up, my mother told me these stories, and I believe them, but as you grow older, if you go off to school, you're going to, you know, the narrative today is that these stories didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And if you're a person of faith, and you're also a person of reason, we have called the film Thinking Man Films for a reason, because of reason. And I started to say, do I have to separate my mind, if you know, the intellect from my faith? And I just had a conviction that I needed to continue to pursue this story, as well as my partner David Westner, and we pursued it because we. I think we're called to do that. I mean, as simply as that.
Absolutely. Jesus said, you've got two commands, basically. Love your neighbors, you love yourself. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart, your soul, and your mind.
Right. Exactly. And I appreciate that you brought that up, because I started to realize that you can't disconnect the two. And so what has happened is that through this long 12-year journey, you know, for the first film, through that process, there was a lot of maturing going on. And we were going to places, and we were learning about the fact that even though mainstream archaeologists were saying there's no evidence at the time that they're looking at, they've refused to look at any other time periods. And so what Patterns of Evidence has uncovered is that there's a whole pattern of evidence, and we've taken the scientific approach. You know, we're looking for the arrival of the Israelites, their multiplication, the enslavement, the punishment of Egypt, which the Bible talks about, the exodus out of Egypt, and the conquest of the Promised Land. So the question was, anywhere in 1,000 years of Egypt's history, because there's debate over this time period, and how stable is that? So that was what I engaged in. That's what I was able to go investigate. And what amazingly happened is, you know, here's the book, Patterns of Evidence. We've got films. We were able to find out that this use of the scientific approach, because truth is truth, right?
Right.
Is that we found this amazing pattern of evidence. And we found it by talking to archaeologists and Egyptologists who said, yeah, hold on a minute. People aren't acknowledging or admitting that there is this pattern that's out there. Mm-hmm. And that's how this all grew into such an amazing award-winning project.
The consensus among Egyptologists is that, you know, this didn't happen, that the Israelites were not there. And yet, they all acknowledge that there was a period of 100 or 200 years where invaders, or perhaps those who just kind of came in across
Hyksos.
The open border, the Hyksos, which was the Hellenized version of the Egyptian word meaning rulers of foreign lands, came in roughly 1750 to 1650 BC, and they were kicked out somewhere around 1550, 1450 BC. They were Semitic. They had Semitic names. I was shocked to learn that there was, at one point, one of their kings, an Egyptian pharaoh, whose name was Jacob. Not that Jacob, but it just showed that there were Semites in
Egypt during this period of history. How do they justify saying, we've got all this evidence for a large population of non-Egyptian, probably Canaanite, Semitic inhabitants who clearly ruled over Egypt during this period, and yet we know for sure that none of them were from the house of Israel.
Yeah. Well, here's what I think as we've been looking at this. And I'm a filmmaker. I'm not an Egyptologist or a Bible scholar. But I did sleep in a Best Western, right? No. Anyway, I couldn't avoid that. But what happened was I am looking and talking to different people, and what's happening is that we're basically seeing that this group earlier to the time period that you're talking about mm-hmm. was another group, and they were allowed to be there. And that's what the film reveals.
Right.
I think, after listening to these other Egyptologists, that there was a vacuum created. A vacuum created mm-hmm. after the Exodus. And that's when the Middle Kingdom of Egypt collapsed. And there was this group came in, mm-hmm. and they took over.
And the so-called Second Intermediate Period began.
Yep, yeah. That's right. And then later on, the New Kingdom came. Well, if you look at the film, there's a wall of time, and we explain all this in the film. But I think what happened, and how it made sense to me, was that if there was an exodus and Egypt was devastated, the army was devastated, you know, was gone and destroyed. Mm-hmm. Pharaoh was gone. The firstborn was gone. Mm-hmm. Egypt would be, on the ropes.
Yeah.
It created a vacuum.
Easy pickings.
Yep, and they could just come in there. And then a foreign ruler came in. And that's what this historian, Manetho, says. God, not the gods, but God smote us. Mm-hmm. And a force came in. And what we do know is that, as the film shows, is that there's these other events that happened that match the story of the Exodus. And no one's ever wanted to connect them to it because they say they're way too early.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that's amazing about this is you couldn't actually make this stuff up. It had to exist before we got there. And that's the reason, and it has to exist in the right sequence. And that's basically what Patterns of Evidence is doing.
It seems to me that the objection of the archaeologists and Egyptologists would be roughly equivalent to us in our modern day 21st century world saying, because we don't have video evidence of George Washington, I mean, actually alive and walking around and doing what he did at Valley Forge and all that he didn't exist. And of course, that would be looking in the wrong time period because video hadn't been invented yet, and that's
right.
Is that essentially what's going on with the Egyptologists?
Well, I think it's even more like this. We're not going to talk about this anymore. The Bible is not a document that we want to talk about anymore. The Bible is mythical, and we've already proven that it didn't happen, and we're not going to look at any other time periods. And as a group, we're dismissing this document. But they'll still look at other documents that are religious, like Egyptian documents, mm-hmm. is what I understand. There can be prayers, there can be prayers to gods like Amun, and they'll say certain events that'll happen, and they'll eat that stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
They have no problem with that. But as soon as you start touching the Bible, then there's a problem.
Yeah.
In today's, it wasn't always that way. So here's what I'm going to share with your audience, is that we are moving forward. We're making more films. We've got this website, patternsofevidence.com. If you want to know about the existing film, we've got the book. We've got DVDs and Blu-rays. We've got this extended edition, which we're excited about. It has actually up to almost 10 hours of material where I've expanded the Patterns of Evidence. So you get a Blu-ray and a DVD, and we also have the Digging Deeper into the Archaeology and the Bible, which kind of explains what we're just talking about.
Yeah.
Deeper, like, well, what? Why have people then alienated the Bible from any more discussion or research? They won't look at the history of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked with an archaeologist who said, listen, we know there's all sorts of evidence for the Bible, and we talk about it amongst ourselves, but we can't talk about it publicly because we will be ostracized from our school or something's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so here I'm an outsider, okay? I don't have any dog in the fight. I'm just an outsider filmmaker. And I'm able to actually then say, okay, listen, audience, I want you to be aware of something, that if when people say that we don't have any evidence for this, that's not the whole story. There's absolutely amazing patterns of evidence that match the story. I'm going to let you decide if you think it's strong enough to connect to it. But a lot of people are saying that this is amazing information that affirms their faith in the Bible.
There is a gentleman you featured prominently in the film, and I've been following his work for a couple of decades. He's an Egyptologist by training, but he's sort of a multidisciplinarian, and I had the opportunity to talk with him. I'm speaking of David Roll.
Yeah.
And he said that it is almost comical in academia. You get specialists in ancient Assyria and specialists in the Hittites and specialists in the Canaanites, and then you get the Egyptologists, and they know just enough of the other disciplines to sort of synchronize their timelines, chronologies, but they don't actually step back and look at the whole, which is what he's done. And he's come up with some radical proposals as far as realigning the timeline, which when you do, then makes it fits perfectly with the biblical narrative. How did you find out about his work, and how willing was he? Did you have to do any persuasion to convince him to share his expertise in the film?
No, actually what happened was that I had come back from Egypt in 2002, and I was having what I would call a crisis of faith, because I had heard that there was no evidence, and I had gone, like most people have never done, I had gone all the way to the other side of the world to the very location and asked the question, is there any evidence for the Israelites in this location? Because this was where they were supposed to live. And Dr. Manfred Bitek said, so far, not. Hmm. And I was stunned when I heard that. And really, that was the turning point in this, in my own personal life. I went home. It was kind of like getting the flu. It didn't happen all at once, but I was sick with the thought that I couldn't deal with my mind and my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where this faith and reason, you know, to love the Lord God. I want to love Him with my mind, but if people are telling me there's no evidence for it, then how can you love God if you're thinking that this isn't true?
Yeah.
And I was sitting in an edit suite one Saturday morning looking at this footage, and I prayed. I said, you've got to help me. I mean, you know, it was just this thought in my mind, you know. And then another thought came in my mind, a kind of a chill, and it was everything that you've been taught. Everything your mother has told you,
yeah.
you, all that you've been believing is a lie.
Yeah.
And this chill came over me. And I didn't realize that, you know, the very first question that's asked in the Bible is when Satan comes to Eve and says, Did God really say you're not to eat of this tree?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So wherever that thought came from, I'll let the audience fill in the blank. Another thought came into my mind that I should stop editing and get up immediately. It was like almost a very strong, you know, impression. And I got up and I was like to go to my office. I felt like I should go to my office and go to the bookcase and there pick out this book. And I forgot that someone had given me this book by David Roll. And I pulled it out and I started to look at it. And I mean, I've had it for a year and a half and never cracked it, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'm opening it up, and I'm realizing that this is the very location that I'm looking at in the editing suite. I got to it. But it was a completely different interpretation. And what David Roll was suggesting, and by the way, you know, David Roll was not a Christian. Well, he was an agnostic, mm-hmm. a person. He wasn't an atheist. It wasn't that he didn't believe in God.
Right.
It's just an agnostic has questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's very honest in that. And he was asking big questions. And he wasn't, you know, he wasn't afraid to ask them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, what ended up happening was we ended up finding out that there, at this location, underneath the city of Ramesses, was a much older city
right.
called Avaris. And that is where David Roll said, this is matching exactly the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And he started to work to understand it and to communicate it. And we could see, and you have to see the film and or read the book to see how it all matches. But it's like a hand in a glove. I mean,
yes.
It just fits perfectly.
Oh, startling. It's even more than the evidence fitting. I mean, he comes up with some pretty specific conclusions that are just jaw-dropping.
Yeah.
So it was...
I flew to England and met him in 2003. And you know, the very first time I only used about 3 minutes of his material. And later we came back and made this film and incorporated him. And I actually went to Egypt with him and met with a lot of other good Egyptologists. And so that's what the goal here is to take this approach of patterns of evidence and continue to ask what did the Bible say because I'm going to look at the model. What is the pattern that it's declaring, mm-hmm. and for the route or for whatever? Look at all the alternatives and re-examine this. And so, good, bad, or ugly, we're going to basically let people sort of put their ideas up. And today I'm going to be talking about this as well.
Yeah. I highly recommend the film. Sharon and I watched it, enjoyed it immensely. Again, having been familiar with David's work, I kind of knew where he was coming from before the film started, but you put it together in a very visual way that makes it easy for non-history buffs to understand, aligning the timelines and showing that the evidence fits, the pattern of evidence fits what we've been taught in the Bible all along.
Right.
And you're right, if that is a lie, if the Exodus is a lie, if the biblical narrative from going all the way back to the beginning of Genesis, if it's untrue, mm-hmm. then our faith is built on error.
Yeah.
And it's a nice thought, but if it's not true, then what's the point?
Well, Jesus basically says, because you don't understand Moses and the prophets, you don't know who I am. You can see how it is so interconnected. I mean, it's this one big interconnected arc. And yes. I like what... Chuck Missler says, it's this integrated message system from outside of time and space.
Absolutely.
And I'm all over that. Yeah. I think that he's absolutely correct in that. And I think what happens is that what people have had happen to them is that they're becoming stronger and bolder because it's either true or it's not. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that you're going to find answers for everything. And you can, as Dr. Walt Kaiser said to me, he says, if you have problems, put them on the back burner for a while. And eventually, something will percolate and it'll come out. But there is more evidence in my mind that it happened. And guess what? I don't think 3,500 years is not a very long time. Mm. You think it would be. But if you just take a 35-year-old and put 100 of them together, that's 3,500 years.
Yeah.
And, so you realize that our life, we're living on a very short lifespan compared to the grand scheme of history and of God. So. It's amazing.
Well, it's a wonderful tool for reinforcing the faith of people who for years have been told that their Bible is nothing but myths and fairy tales. And we appreciate your work. Highly recommend the film. Do get it. Get the background material, and you'll be strengthened. At the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference, I'm Derek Gilbert.
As always, we'll put links in the show notes to the websites of the guests here on A View from the Bunker, Dr. Randall Price and Timothy Mahoney this week. And you'll find those show notes at vftb.net. That's VFTB, your basic acronym, .net. Where was I going with that? Let's do this. Take two. As always, you'll find the links in the show notes at vftb.net to the websites of our guests this week, Dr. Randall Price and Timothy Mahoney. Again, vftb.net for the show notes and links to the websites of our guests. It was really interesting to me, and I hope to you as well, getting to talk to men who have made the study of history and exploring history at ground zero, actually going to the archaeological sites, and in Dr. Price's case, participating in the digs. Because I find it fascinating, as I mentioned earlier, how often the biblical record is confirmed by what scholars dig out of the ground. They don't always agree. They don't always want to admit it, which is the whole point of Tim Mahoney's film, Patterns of Evidence. The evidence is there if you view it through the right lens. That's what really inspired the presentation that I gave at the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference. That plus the Divine Counsel paradigm and the research that Dr. Michael Heiser has done in that regard. If we haven't mentioned his book, The Unseen Realm, this week, consider this the mention and my recommendation for this week that you get a copy of that book. I was given the opportunity to give an expanded version of my presentation called The Great Inception, Satan's Psyops from Eden to Armageddon, focusing on the key holy mountains in the long war of God versus the gods. And this was at Morningside Church here in the Ozarks just a couple of weeks ago. They very graciously offered me another opportunity to come back and do that again. Not the same presentation, going to talk about a couple of different things, but other aspects of this long war related to understanding the biblical account through the divine counsel paradigm a little more clearly, and looking at how the archaeological record and how the cosmology of the neighbors of the ancient Israelites is understood when we look at it through this divine counsel paradigm. So that will be coming up on Friday and Saturday, August 26th and 27th, 7 p.m. Central Time. That's Central Time in the U.S., UTC-5. Yes, UTC-5, because we're on Daylight Savings Time. So Friday the 26th, Saturday the 27th, 7 p.m. Central Daylight Time. If you want to watch it live, it will be streamed to the Internet in real time. It'll also be archived to the web afterwards, so if you can't watch it in real time, you'll have an opportunity later if you are so inclined. I believe I'm going to be talking about Joshua and his conquest of Canaan, and again, this is based on research that Mike Heiser has done, showing that there was a specific purpose and specific targets that God had in mind when he told Joshua to go across the River Jordan and kill everybody in that city, leave nothing, kill everybody, leave nothing. There were specific targets, specific areas where the Israelites were told to devote their enemies to destruction, to kill everything, take no booty, no loot, and just completely wipe it out. And other areas where they were told to conquer, but they could make peace if they if the other people didn't want to fight. There were certain areas, though, where God told them to go in and basically wipe everybody out. Why did he do that? Was God just a genocidal maniac? No, of course not. There were reasons. And that will be part of that talk. And then the second topic will be on the confrontation between Elijah and the priests of Baal on Mount Carmel. That was one of the holy mountains that I left off my list of seven. And Sharon did some research on it the other day over the weekend and showed me some things. So looks like we've got eight holy mountains to deal with now. There are probably more yet that a little more reading will uncover. But that'll be the topic, the confrontation with the prophets of Baal. Obviously supernatural in its nature because of the fire that came down from heaven that consumed the offering. But there's more to it than that, a lot more to it. And it had to do with God showing the Israelites and, well, especially the Israelites, but you know, basically everybody in the neighborhood who was paying attention, who was really the master of the sea and of the storm. This was basically part two of the showdown that began in Egypt when God led the Israelites across the Red Sea. So that'll be the topic at the Morningside Church in Blue Eye, Missouri, 26th and 27th of August. Again, streamed live to the internet. Link will be in the show notes. The website is ptlnetwork.com, ptlnetwork.com. That's Jim Baker's church. And again, we appreciate the opportunity to go and speak. Coming up on A View from the Bunker, we're going to talk about faith in Hollywood. Our friend Brian Godawa, award-winning screenwriter and novelist, has some insight based on a recent summit that he attended, hosted by Variety Magazine, on faith and family. And, you know, normally as Christians think everything coming out of Hollywood is absolutely twisted, and frankly, most of it is. But he said there is some hope, and he explains why. You'll see and hear that conversation this Sunday night. I say see and hear because if you haven't noticed yet, A View from the Bunker, not just audio, but video as well now when I can get video. And all of the interviews are being posted to YouTube as well as to VFTB.net. If you want to subscribe to the YouTube channel, you'll find that at YouTube.com/Derek Gilbert. That's YouTube.com/Derek Gilbert. Next Wednesday, our series continues from the 2016 Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference as we talk with Ken Johnson and Doc Marquis. Ken Johnson and Doc Marquis, a couple of fascinating guys and different areas of expertise. So a diverse conversation next week as you hear those two discussions. Again, that coming up Wednesday, August 17th. Please remember our weekly Bible study. Sharon and I host the Gilbert House Fellowship, which is a weekly study in the New Testament and the Old Testament. We go through about an hour each, and we're going through the Bible in chronological order, in order of the stories as they were recorded in the Bible, not in the order of the books of the Bible, which makes it interesting because you then juxtapose the Psalms, for example, with the life of David and get a better sense for what he was thinking and feeling when he wrote some of those Psalms. You get to juxtapose the Gospels and see how the different accounts of the same stories differed from Matthew to Mark to Luke to John. And you also get the sense that there aren't a lot of contradictions. In fact, there aren't any contradictions, contrary to what the skeptics say, when you go through the various gospel accounts. Anyway, those studies posted weekly, usually by midday Sunday, and you'll find those at gilberthouse.org. Next week on Skywatch TV, it's the first of 3 weeks as we take a musical interlude. The new CD just about ready for release by Joe Horn and Broken for Good. It is an awesome musical effort. Call it Blues Gospel. Fantastic stuff. Features Joe, both his sisters, their mom, but musicianship is absolutely top-notch, and there is a solid gospel message in the music and on that disc. And it will culminate in the third week with the release of a video, which is compelling, it is touching, and hopefully will convey the message that God, no matter what you've done, will reach out to you if you ask right where you stand, which, not coincidentally, is the name of that CD. So that will air next week on Skywatch TV. For listings, dates, and times, log on to skywatchtv.com. We appreciate your reviews at iTunes or Stitcher or wherever else you find us. Please log on, give us your thumbs up and multiple stars. And, of course, we discuss the topics that we cover here on A View from the Bunker at our Facebook page. And you'll find that at facebook.com/viewfromthebunker. Which is a production of Gilbert House and released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 4.0 International License. The opening theme is by Kevin MacLeod. His website is incompetech.com. We thank you for listening. We do this because we wrestle not against flesh and blood. I'm Derek Gilbert, and this is A View from the Bunker.